Since the coronavirus pandemic compelled Howard University to transition to online learning in March of 2020, we have been working diligently to prepare for our students' eventual return to campus. While COVID-19 continues to spread across the country, the time has finally arrived where we can bring more of our students back to Howard while ensuring their health and safety. Hello, my name is Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guests today on the journey are Dr. Cynthia Evers, Howard University's Vice President of Student Affairs, and that's the first time I get to say that publicly, and Dr. Roger Mitchell, Chair of Pathology at Howard University College of Medicine, two of the administrators working behind the scenes to ensure a safe environment for the students' return to campus this fall. Dr. Evers and Dr. Mitchell, welcome to the journey.
Thank you.
So first let me start with, let's take a moment of silence just to honor those that we have lost over the course of the pandemic. And also over last summer, while obviously we lost George Floyd to a murder, there were several other people hurt in protests and other people that were murdered that probably did not garner as much national attention, but we do owe them our respect and dignity. So we'll take a quick moment of silence. So thank you again for joining us. There are a few things that I want to talk about, and we're going to jump right in. There's a lot of concern about what we're doing, et cetera, with respect to health and safety. I spent some time recently with the early learning program on campus, the parents, the staff, talking about getting vaccinated and so on. And as I've made my promise publicly, I'm going to make it again today, reaffirm it. Anyone who wants to have a conversation about being vaccinated, or they want me to speak to a family member or a friend anywhere in the country or the world, I'm happy to do that. You give me that number and I'll call that person within 24 hours and have that conversation. That conversation is not to convince them to be vaccinated, but to educate them about the different issues around vaccination. So I'm going to keep that promise. And so I've been speaking to employees, et cetera, Dr. Evers, and peers, as you can imagine. First, let's start with the move-in process. You and your team did something very different this year. I have to admit by my urging, so I appreciate you taking on my crazy suggestions. You lengthened the process, and to be quite honest, it probably was timely with COVID, so congestion was less, but it seemed to be a smoother process. What's your evaluation of the move-in process this year?
Yeah, well, I think that the move-in process when I think of three different topics. First of all, it was safe. Also, it was structured, and also we wanted to make sure that it was fun. So as it relates to safety, we made sure that all the students and the volunteers who entered the buildings during the move-in process, that they wear masks or face coverings, sanitize their hands as they enter and re-enter the building, and have temperature checks as well. Just to make sure that they could freely move in and outside the building, we had bands on their wrists as well. But the whole purpose was to just make sure that it was a structured process to what you just described, to eliminate crowds and practice social distancing. And the fun part was, we had a robust group of volunteers that were fun and just in a mode of just wanting to help and making sure that we had snacks, they were individually wrapped, t-shirts and other small gifts and so forth. So it was a festive, fun time for all.
And it's an anxiety causing, there's no doubt about it. My son plays soccer, he just committed to a university I'll leave unnamed. and he is a year away from making that move, and I'm already feeling like I'm having a daily conversation with him about it, which is more an expression of my own anxiety. What's your sense of what parents walked away with as they dropped their kids off, as they worried about their safety in general, but then also as it relates to COVID?
One thing that parents shared is that they were just so happy to see the precautions that we'd taken. We cleaned the facilities extremely well. We had signage throughout the buildings, sanitation stations, and we're also requiring all students that reside in the residential halls to be vaccinated. And they were very, very pleased with that. Right. So that made them feel well about that.
So Dr. Mitchell, you're kind of a son of a soil, as they say,
yes.
A Howard man through and through. Let me ask you, as it comes to the issue of being vaccinated, as Dr. Evers just mentioned, why is it important for us to have a mandate around vaccination? Obviously, I take responsibility for the big gap in time between mandating the students be vaccinated versus the faculty and staff recognizing vaccination hesitancy within our community. So, but why do you think it's important for us to have that mandate?
Well, first, President, thanks for having me here on the journey. This is exciting. And my son actually came, we dropped him off last week in that process that was just described by VP Evers. And I'll echo that. We had a great experience. We were able to get him in. It was timely. It was organized. And we felt safe. And so shout out to my son, Nathaniel Mitchell, who's a freshman, right? He'll like that. As far as vaccination, you know, it's really about protecting yourself. And then as well as being a good steward of the people around you. And so we know by being vaccinated, you have a lesser risk of severe disease. You have a lesser risk of being hospitalized and meeting an unfortunate death if you're vaccinated. But then also that virus doesn't have the ability to take hold and doesn't have the ability to replicate or create other mutants that would put itself or variants that would put other people at risk. And so it's important as a community, whether it's Howard University, the larger DC community, or the larger diaspora, that we get ourselves vaccinated so that we can protect not only ourselves, but each other.
And I want to dig into that further because I think this is a concept that sometimes I think is difficult to communicate to lay people. And that is the concept that if you have 1,000 hosts versus 10, the likelihood that that virus is going to stay virulent and to the point that you just made become stronger is lessened. And so this is about decreasing yourself as a host, decreasing the chance that you'd be a host and obviously be able to transmit, but also protecting others around you. That's shared accountability. Right now in the country, about 90%, I believe, of new infections are related to the Delta variant, which means that we have a very virulent form of COVID. Unvaccinated people are far more likely to be sick, and to the point that you made, getting hospitalized and dying, again, the vast majority are the unvaccinated. With that in mind, what do you see for our campus as necessary measures that must be taken given what's happening with the Delta variant and the fact that we're going to have students, faculty, and staff coming in and out of the community at large? So what are some of the things and precautions you think we should be taking?
I think at the end of the day, Dr. Frederick, bison safe, right? We want to be bison safe. And what does that mean? That means that we want to be vaccinated, 100% vaccination. To come on campus. We know that there's some minor exceptions to that rule. So you want to be vaccinated, protecting yourself, protecting the people around you. You want to use your masks liberally. We know that anybody that's in a closed space in a building needs to be wearing their masks. And then if you're in groups, even outside, right, if you feel people around, put your mask on. The mask is not a detriment. The mask is a tool to protect yourself. So we don't want to be afraid of our masks. We want to use our masks liberally. And then testing. You know, some universities and some organizations are not testing. Well, here at Howard, we know that we want to continue to test. And so we'll be beginning our student, faculty, and staff testing on a regular basis just to make sure that we get an idea of the prevalence of this virus in our community. And then Bison Safe app, right? If I'm to remind people to go on the Bison Safe app daily to attest to your symptoms, to attest to your exposures, so that you can have a green barcode pass, so that as you're walking through campus, you know that everyone knows around you that you haven't been exposed and that we're doing what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, I think very, very important things. One of the things I've been concerned about of national public health officials is I think that they've become a bit distracted by the mask issue versus the vaccination issue. I think if they keep pounding on the fact that we need to get vaccinated, and as you articulated, you use masks, you know, liberally, but let's just focus on being vaccinated. The mask, it pales in comparison to what getting vaccinated is going to do. And that's important about staying on message. Having said that, Dr. Evers, Bison Week is upon us. Bison Week is usually a very festive time. Mm-hmm. So there's gathering in numbers. What can students expect and what's going to be different about Bison Week this week?
Well, one thing that we've been sharing with the students is that when they return to campus, it's not a return to normal. They must know, as has been indicated here, that there are certain steps and safety procedures that you must take. So the Office of Campus Life has planned a number of events and experiences that are going to be fun, but they're also going to be safe. And they range from, they call it Screen on the Green, where it's a big movie. We had that last night, as a matter of fact, and the students did so well. They were in their individual spaces and pods and things like that, and again, was able to enjoy being back on campus, but at the same time being safe. In addition, we want to make sure that the students are participating in what we call a student ambassador program, where we call the Weekend Warrior, where students will have an opportunity to just kind of have their little t-shirts and encourage other students to be safe. You do what you're supposed to do and be safe. And the last thing is the Bison Pledge. We make sure that our students understand what the whole Bison Pledge is about. We distribute the Bison Pledge prior to students coming. We make sure that they get it when they actually come on the campus. And we also just reinforce it at every opportunity that we can, whether it's hall meetings in the residential halls and so forth. And the Bison Plan Pledge simply speaks to the whole notion of making sure that you're keeping yourself safe, keeping others safe, and also thinking about your community as well.
So with that in mind, I think just to piggyback on that notion about the student responsibility and normal versus what things were like, you know, in trying to explain this to my kids, I reminded them, my kids were born in 2004 and 2006, and I reminded them that there was a time when you could travel, drop somebody to the airport, and actually take them all the way to the gate. I even tell them a funny story of when I was in college and going back to Trinidad and Tobago to visit, and my uncle tried to give me some junk to take with me, a bag I didn't want to take. So I snuck on the plane without him realizing I left the bag in the car, and then I looked up 5 minutes later, he was on the plane with the bag. He wasn't flying with me. So I told him that's how different air travel was. They have no concept of the fact that you could drop somebody off at the airport and walk all the way to the gate and say right. bye. Right. So I think this concept of normal is an important one, and how we articulate that to students, that we do it in a way that they recognize that the world is always evolving right. and it's always going to be different. And I'm wondering what you're seeing in terms of students' assessment of that, as well as the fact that I don't like to describe last year as a lost year. We all lived it. Lessons were learned, so there was nothing lost about it. How are students at this age taking in that concept as you see them coming on campus?
Well, first of all, they want to be safe, so they are concerned about that. Sometimes they get, a little forgetful to do certain things, but their peers are the ones that are just really on them to make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to do as it relates to safety. And they talk to us about how they miss the time that they can do a lot of close proximity face-to-face activities and so forth. But right now they understand and they, follow the rules and regulations. And unfortunately, if the rules and regulations are not enforced, then we have to, bring in the student code of conduct just to make sure that everyone is accountable.
Understood. And, Dr. Mitchell, I guess back to you on the topic of safety in general. I have a major concern that we all, not just the students, but faculty and staff, we just haven't been around each other a lot. So our socialization skills have probably been impacted. And unfortunately, I think some of what we're seeing in our larger community with a rise in violence, et cetera, I think may represent some of that. You obviously were the tip of the spear on this issue in the DC government as a deputy mayor on public safety. What's your take on where we are in terms of domestic violence and also some of the crime increase that we're seeing, and how do you think that may impact us on campus?
Well, you know, the thing about what we're seeing in violence in the local Washington, D.C., is that we're seeing it throughout the country. And we're seeing it along the lines of class, just as much as we're seeing it along the lines of race. And so just like COVID exposed the disparities and inequities that we've seen in our healthcare delivery system, those of us that haven't had exposure to access to healthcare, those of us suffering with obesity and diabetes, chronic disease, we're more likely to get severe COVID disease and then die, right? And so we know that. Well, the constructs of the social determinants of health, where we live, work, play, love, have our being, have our faith, those environments impact how we live and our outcomes as far as health. Violence is no different. And so I think what we're seeing is that same construct, the frustrations of joblessness, the frustrations of not having equitable access, the remnants of institutional and structural racism that we find in our communities really is revving its head, not only in COVID, but in violence. So we have to be vigilant. We have to message to the people, to our young people here on campus, to our faculty and staff. We have to acknowledge the frustration that may be felt. We have to acknowledge, just as you've acknowledged now, that we haven't been around people, that we need to make sure that we show grace, if I can use that term, right, to one another as we're engaging and trying to solve problems. Because at the end of the day, the human experience is about solving problems with one another. And so we want to acknowledge that, but also understand that we're not going to accept behavior that is violent, not accept behavior that is disrespectful. We want to teach collegiality here on campus and throughout the city. And so I know that you're dedicated to putting the college in position to do that, not only here, but in the larger city, in the larger diaspora. And that's what we should be doing.
And, you know, Dr. Evers, with that in mind, I mean, one of the things, and it's funny that Dr. Mitchell mentioned grace, I talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. One of the things we must get our young people to do is to amplify each other's humanity.
Right.
What type of messaging are you planning for students so that they would recognize that? They haven't been sharing rooms with, you know, complete strangers. They haven't had to share cafeteria space. I mean, from big things to small things,
right,
we've gotten into a different mode, right? People have been on their webinars while watching their Netflix
right.
movie on something else, and those comforts are away. You know, we're in spaces with people, you have to disagree with them in person. It's very different to disagree with them on a Zoom and close your screen. So what are you messaging to the young people in order to make sure that they continue to treat each other with that grace?
Sure, the old-fashioned respect for one another. And also, the Division of Student Affairs has created some opportunities for students to understand about collaborative efforts, how to get along with one another, and again, the whole respect piece as it relates to not just themselves, but to one another and the community at large. And we're just encouraging safety from all angles and also making sure that they know what the expectations are as it relates to the university.
Now, Dr. Evers, you're a product of HBCU, Virginia State University, where my brother alum is currently the president, Dr. Abdullah. And you also were educated here in the city at George Washington, both with an MA and EDD. What have you seen over this past year about Howard that has convinced you that we've matured as an organization to meet these challenges, especially through student life?
Sure. As it relates to Division of Student Affairs or Student Life, again, the whole notion of just encouraging safety from all angles. And the what I think also we've matured and just understand that the whole existence of online and remote classes and so forth, students like that. Some students really, really like that. And they also like the fact that they could also do some of the hybrid, like the physical and the remote learning combined. So those are just some of the things. And also the whole flexibility piece. Our students have been just awesome as it relates to just recognizing that this is an evolving process and you have to be flexible in order to be successful and safe.
Now, I'm clearly biased. I think being at Howard at this moment in time is extremely special for a variety of reasons. And I felt that in my spirit when I took this job initially, although at that time it seemed that there were more clouds than sun. But as the African saying goes, no matter how long the night is, the day will break. And I definitely think the day has broken on Howard, even in the middle of a pandemic, not putting the pandemic aside. Having said that, Dr. Mitchell, you have a long history with Howard, you and your family. Why now in terms of joining the team, and what do you see for the future, not just of the Department of Pathology, but in general, there's centers that you're going to be involved with and other activities that we're engaging you around. And so given your undergrad experience at Howard to now, what's your motivation at this point?
Well, I tell you, like you said, I bias. I don't think there's any better institution in the country from its undergraduate to all of its graduate programs. We know the medical school is been listed as the number one diverse medical school for U.S. News and World Report. Now, we don't rely on those statistics, but we like to quote them when they're good, right? And so being a part of this institution right now, when a whole new health sciences push is occurring, being here now when there's a health disparity center, international health disparity center, multiple centers surrounding healthcare delivery here at Howard University, the Mecca, to have an opportunity to be a part of it, small part, big part, however I can serve this organization, I want to serve the organization. And so I tell the story, my brag is that my grandfather graduated Howard College of Medicine in 1932. And my grandmother got a certificate in nursing in 1937. And so to be here, to be able to walk this campus again, but now as faculty and professor, is a true joy, and I'll serve the best I can.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, the young people are always gonna be our concern, and convincing them about where we're going and where we wanna take them is always gonna be part of that challenge. And I still say to students today that 20% of the education they get, they'll get in the classroom, 80% mm-hmm. outside of it. So the programming in the residence halls throughout the year is absolutely critical for how they gather that information. So with that in mind, what are some of the things that you want the rest of the community to support to ensure that 80% of their growth and learning that we all have to pour into, that you want us to be paying attention to?
Sure. Definitely just making sure that we collaborate. Academic affairs, student affairs, it's just a seamless priority when the two come together like we do already. And we want to make sure that we are providing mental health awareness and also just mental health strategies for our students. We want to make sure that we are taking advantage and students understanding the comprehensive resources that we have on the campus. We have student services for students, and we have just a number of areas in which we provide resources for our students. Some of the programming vary according to what the students' needs are. Typically, we take surveys, and then, of course, there are some things that we know that they need to have in order to be successful. So any type of resources, activity, engagement, student engagement is just the number one way for students to learn. We know that academics are important, and that's the reason that they're here, but we also understand that we create these leadership opportunities, these internship opportunities. Howard University has developed relationships with so many people in the area in Washington, D.C., and our students just benefit from that because they are able to do the internships and practicums, et cetera. So those are some of the things that we would love to have support or continued support with.
And Dr. Mitchell, I've decided that Howard must lead in this moment. I think the crises that the country are facing have been under currents for decades. And I think that this is the most pregnant moment in our history for Howard University to step up and lead. In your opinion, why must Howard lead at this present time?
Well, I think that we have an opportunity for collaborative research. We have the ability to garner the intellectual scope of everything from the historical significance of this time to the practical delivery of services to the establishment of policy. We have the ability to lead because we're the leaders of America here at Howard University. And there's no corner of this globe where there's not a Howard alumni leading. And so our job is to create more of those leaders to fill the roles that are required in this country. And so we're the individuals that are going to be best suited as complete learners and professionals to be able to lead in this space to come. And so that's our job, is to prepare the future.
Well, it's great having both of you. Thank you for joining. My guests today have been Dr. Cynthia Evers. She's Howard University's newly minted Vice President for Student Affairs, and Dr. Roger Mitchell, the Chair of the Department of Pathology and a Howard alumnus. I have to say that starting a new school year is always exciting, but in this particular year, doing that safely and doing it with individuals like you leading the charge around keeping the campus safe certainly warms my heart. So thanks again for all that you do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.